Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, August 17th, 2024. Endeavor Energy founder Autry Stevens dies at 86. Endeavor Energy Resources on Friday announced the passing of its founder and chairman of the board, Autry C. Stevens, at the age of 86. His daughter, Lyndall Stevens Greth, who previously served as vice chairman, will assume the role of chairman of Endeavor's board of managers. Quote, "We are deeply saddened by the passing of our beloved founder, Autry C. Stevens," end quote, said Lance Robertson, Endeavor's president and chief executive officer, in a statement. Quote, "Over many decades, his vision and discipline inspired so many and were the driving forces behind what makes Endeavor unique. Autry embodied the wildcat mentality of courage, grit, and tenacity associated with the Permian Basin. He leaves a legacy that will continue to shape the future of our company, community, and the oil and gas industry for years to come," end quote. Quote, "Autry Stevens was a giant among giants in the Permian Basin. He was a great man and built an extraordinary company focusing on the Permian Basin. He will be missed, but his legend will live on," end quote, commented Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, by email to the Reporter Telegram. His association had honored Stevens with its Top Hand Award in 2022. After much speculation about who could acquire Endeavor, it was announced in February the company will be acquired by Diamondback Energy for $26 billion in a deal expected to close by the end of the year. Quote, "Our deepest condolences go out to the Stevens family and the entire Endeavor Energy Resources community during this difficult time. Autry was a pioneering force in the Permian Basin, and he will be profoundly missed," end quote. Travis Stice, Diamondback's chairman of the board and chief executive officer, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Stevens began life on a De Leon area farm with expectations he would join the family business. But he acknowledged that he wasn't a very good farmer, and a major drought in his final year of high school prompted his father to advise him to consider something else because farming is a hard way to make a living, he told the Reporter Telegram in an earlier interview. He leveraged his early interest in the petroleum industry into founding Endeavor in 1979 and built it into one of the largest private oil producers in the U.S., producing over 420,000 gross barrels of oil equivalent per day and employing approximately 1,150 people. After receiving bachelor's and master's degree in petroleum engineering from the University of Texas at Austin, he started his career with Humble Oil and Refining in 1962, soon joining the Army Corps of Engineers, becoming responsible for pipeline installations. After his military service, he rejoined Humble and, 5 years later, moved to Midland. It would, the company noted, change the Permian Basin. Reflecting on his career, Stevens said Endeavor has contributed a lot in ad valorem and severance taxes, but the company has also supported Habitat for Humanity, Museum of the Southwest, helped fund a new volunteer fire station in eastern Midland County, and he supports employees' community efforts. Quote, "I think my major contribution is creating good-paying jobs and stable jobs," end quote, he said. Reader's Choice is here, and you made it happen. At long last, it's finally here. The votes for the 2024 MRT Reader's Choice Awards have been cast, tallied, and published in this beautiful magazine. It's a massive undertaking. How massive? Looking at the numbers, I was blown away. This year's magazine is the largest in MRT history at a whopping 176 pages, and it had to be that big. You, the community, cast well over 100,000 votes this year and chose more than 1,200 winners. On top of that, more than 2,600 businesses participated and received nominations and votes. The MRT Reader's Choice Awards magazine isn't just a who's who of businesses in our community. It's a guide to the many services available on your life journey. Ready to get engaged to the love of your life? The jewelers inside might have the diamond that elicits the wide-eyed gasp followed by the next chapter affirming yes. Turn the pages, and there's a section dedicated to all things weddings. Being newly wed means big decisions. Who can help you find your dream home? Real estate agents are awaiting your call, as are banks for a home mortgage. The dream home is no longer a dream, and a backyard party is in order to meet the neighbors. Steaks are certain to make a great first impression, and the top butchers are waiting in these pages. Next thing you know, a little one is on the way, until you find out it's twins. What daycare options are there? What schools are in town? Where can I buy a bigger car? What fun things are there to do for the whole family? Where should we go on vacation? Who can take a great family photo? Who can I trust when the kids are sick? I can't believe how fast they're growing. Where can I get them new clothes? Reader's Choice has the answers. Unexpectedly, domestic needs arise. You need a new roof, a plumber, an electrician, a handyman, a new garage door, new carpeting. Maybe you need a bigger house with more bathrooms, a man cave, and a she shed. Businesses with these specialties and more are in this magazine. No matter your chapter in life, you'll need help along the way. The MRT Reader's Choice Awards magazine is filled with the more than 1,000 businesses waiting to serve you. And the best part, they were recommended by your neighbors here in Midland. I want to personally thank everyone who voted and made their voices heard. Your participation in itself is a service to the community. And on behalf of everyone here at the Midland Reporter-Telegram, I hope MRT Reader's Choice Awards magazine serves you in many ways and for many years to come. The 2024 MRT Reader's Choice magazine is available at our winter locations as listed in the digital version of this year's magazine. www.mrt.com/readerschoice or at the MRT offices at 15 Smith Road, Midland, Texas, 79705, Suite 1004. Midland unemployment dips to 2.8% in July. Midland unemployment inched lower in July, a trend seen among the Texas Workforce Commission's 26 Metropolitan Statistical Areas, MSAs. The commission said the unemployment rate in its Midland MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, dipped to 2.8% from 2.9% in June, and is just above the 2.7% reported last July. Odessa saw its unemployment rate dip to 3.8% from 3.9% in June and above the 3.5% seen last July. Midland continues to report the lowest unemployment statewide, followed by Amarillo at 3.4% and Austin Round Rock and College Station Bryan at 3.6% each. The Midland MSA lost 1,200 total non-farm jobs from June to July, 800 of which came from the government sector. Willie Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin, explained that as the seasonal trend of contract workers losing their jobs during school districts' summer closure, quote, the job market is really strong in our region, end quote, he told the Reporter-Telegram by telephone. Quote, the money is so great, people want to work or they want to enter short-term training programs, end quote. Taylor noted that he attended Thursday's State of Education luncheon in which Texas Tech Health Sciences Center, Midland College, and the University of Texas Permian Basin focused on the need for workforce development. Taylor said that has been an issue he has been trying to draw attention to since George W. Bush was Texas governor. Quote, I tell people the Permian Basin is a great place to work. Whether it's in oil and gas, education, healthcare, law enforcement, information technology, transportation, end quote, he said. Thanks to the local colleges and universities, he said it looks like the pipeline of future workforce looks strong. But he worries about sufficient infrastructure to accommodate that growth. Quote, it's a good time to be in the Permian Basin. We have great wages. We have great job opportunities. We have great training, end quote, he said. Technology and automation in the region's oil and gas sector may grow, he said, quote, but they'll still need people, end quote. Midland's labor market remained steady, and the civilian labor force dipping to 117,016 from 117,094 in June and coming in above the 114,829 seen last July. The number of employed Midlanders rose to 113,746 from 113,699 and is above the 111,754 employed last year. The number of unemployed fell to 3,270 from 3,395 in June and is higher than the 3,075 unemployed last year. Midland shed 1,200 jobs from June to July, led by the loss of 800 jobs in the government sector and 400 jobs in the mining, logging, and construction sector. The other services sector was down 100 jobs for the month. Trade, transportation, and utilities was the only sector to gain jobs from June to July, with the addition of 100 jobs. For the 12 months from July 2023 to July 2024, Midland added 1,600 jobs for a growth rate of 1.3%. Private education and health services dominated with the addition of 1,300 jobs. Trade, transportation, and utilities followed with 400 new jobs, followed by the government sector with 300 jobs. Financial activities added 200 jobs, and the manufacturing sector gained 100 jobs. Mining, logging, and construction led in job losses, shedding 500 jobs. The information sector and the leisure and hospitality sectors each lost 100 jobs during that time. Statewide, the unemployment rate was 4.1%. The commission said the state's seasonally adjusted civilian labor force achieved a new record high of 15,353,700 after adding 41,900 people over the month in July, marking a seventh consecutive month of growth. Over the year, Texas civilian labor force has added 248,900 people. The seasonally adjusted total non-farm employment fell by 14,500 jobs to 14,166,400 in July. While Midland reported the lowest unemployment, the highest was in McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission at 6.7%. School shooting. Santa Fe ISD won't face liability in civil case against accused parents. The Santa Fe Independent School District will not be added to the ongoing civil case against the parents of the accused gunman in the 2018 Santa Fe school shooting, a judge ruled Wednesday. Defense attorneys filed a motion to include SFISD as a responsible third party in the trial last week. Court documents show the defendants had hoped to shift some responsibility to the school district, which they said failed to address disturbing internet searches on school computers, among other concerns. But Judge Jack Ewing said they did not meet the deadline required to include a third party. Quote, "It's clear under the law and the Civil Practices and Remedies Code that a defendant is required to file at least within 60 days prior to trial," end quote, Ewing said. Quote, "The court does find that, and I think it's undisputed here, that the deadline was not met by the defendants," end quote. The parents of a 17-year-old victim filed the case 6 days after the shooting. It has since expanded to include the families of seven people killed in the shooting and four who were wounded as plaintiffs. They are seeking to hold Antonios Pagurtsis and Rose Marie Cosmatosis, the parents of the accused shooter, financially liable for the 2018 shooting that left 10 dead and 13 injured. Plaintiffs believe the family should be held liable for failing to recognize the alleged mental instability of the then 17-year-old and not properly securing the firearms in the household. Dimitrios Pagurtsis, the 23-year-old believed to be responsible for the shooting, has yet to face trial. Court-appointed psychologists found him mentally unfit for trial on five separate occasions, delaying criminal proceedings until at least 2025. In an interview with KPRC, Nicholas Pohl, a defense attorney in the criminal case against Dimitrios Pagurtsis, said he suffers from hallucinations and persistent delusions that make him incapable of assisting in his defense. Quote, "He does not live in the same reality as the rest of us do," end quote, Pohl said. Quote, "His reality is a very confused and inconsistent mess," end quote. An official diagnosis has yet to be released. Dimitrios Pagurtsis' father, mother, and 20-year-old sister testified over the past week and stated they were not aware of his deteriorating mental condition. The firearms used in the shooting were legally owned by his father and mother, who claimed they had no idea how he accessed a display case where one of the weapons was locked up. Quote, "Dimitrios has made a victim of everyone on that side and everyone on this side," end quote, defense attorney Lori Laird said Wednesday, gesturing to both sides of the courtroom. Quote, "Everyone has been made a victim of him, and I think it's important for the jury to see the whole picture," end quote. panelists share details of new university programs coming to Permian Basin. The Midland Chamber of Commerce hosted its State of Education Luncheon on Thursday, where university leaders from the University of Texas Permian Basin, UTPB, Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, TTUHSC, and Midland College came together to discuss the importance of higher education. Sandra Woodley, president of UTPB, Darren DeAgostino, provost of TTUHSC, and Damon Kennedy, president of Midland College, were the panelists in this year's State of Education discussion, moderated by Adrian Carrasco, trustee of Midland College. The panelists shared insight about the institutions, such as what their mission is and challenges they faced, such as recruitment and enrollment and the decrease in public confidence. Another highlight of the panel discussion was that partnerships with local industries and businesses are important to prepare students for the workforce. Woodley, DeAgostino, and Kennedy also shed light on the new programs at their institutions that are contributing to their mission to produce a talented workforce. UTPB. The University of Texas Permian Basin announced the start of a civil engineering program this fall. Quote, engineering is really important in the Permian Basin, end quote, Woodley said. Quote, one of the biggest areas of gap here we're learning from our industry leaders is civil engineering, end quote. Woodley added that the demand for civil engineers has allowed them to partner up with industry leaders to get this program running. UTPB is also expanding its healthcare programming to cover the behavioral health side of things as well. Quote, we're really working to make sure that our programs coalesce together to meet the needs of the behavioral health community, end quote, Woodley said. She added that UTPB is adding a behavioral health hospital and creating more counselors and professionals that can help in the healthcare area, particularly the behavioral health community. Midland College. Midland College is also expanding its behavioral health program through a partnership with UTPB. Quote, thanks to Speaker Tom Craddock, we have a little extra funding behind our behavioral health initiatives, end quote, Kennedy said. Quote, we're doing that in collaboration with UTPB and the hospital, the new behavioral health facility, end quote. Midland College is also adding a natural gas compression and automation program. Kennedy emphasized the importance of partnerships and said that bringing these new programs came from seeking input from industries and businesses. Quote, we don't bring those programs online without the significant input from business and industry, end quote, Kennedy said. Quote, we don't build a natural gas compression or automation program in a vacuum, end quote. He added that the input helps them design the program to prepare students for the workforce. Quote, we have the business and industry representatives in the room telling us the skill sets that they need, the technologies that they're utilizing, and what the future may look like, end quote, Kennedy said. Quote, we've minded that and begun to build these programs, end quote. TTUHSC. TTUHSC recently received a Title V grant, which is a program under the U.S. Department of Education that provides grants to assist Hispanic-serving institutions to enhance their academic offerings, program quality, and institutional stability. DeAgostino said that with this grant, TTUHSC will be able to serve more Hispanic students. TTUHSC is one of the first three health-related institutions to also be a Hispanic-serving institution. Quote, we just received a very large sum of money to allow us to recruit from areas where we have maybe predominantly Hispanic-speaking individuals and open opportunities for them to get educated and go back to the community, end quote, DeAgostino said. He added that TTUHSC will be able to recruit individuals who want to receive an education and return to their community to give back. TTUHSC also has a very prominent physician assistant, PA, program. Quote, it has come a very long way to be able to produce high-quality healthcare providers, end quote, DeAgostino said. Quote, we have clinicians in the community now through that program. I believe it's about 70% for staying here in West Texas alone, end quote. He added that the PA program has a high graduation rate that they are proud of the program. Quote, we couldn't have done it without Speaker Craddock, end quote, DeAgostino said. Quote, thank you so much for being a guardian angel and helping us build this, end quote. oil price roller coaster back in operation this week. That crude oil price roller coaster was back in operation with prices surging on concerns, winding Middle East tensions would curtail supplies, and then falling on signs supplies weren't threatened and of weaker Chinese demand. West Texas Intermediate fell 3 of 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange, opening the trading week by climbing $3.22 to $80.06 a barrel. Prices then began to retreat, attempted to regain their footing Thursday with a $1.18 rise, and closed the week with a $1.51 decline to $76.65, down from $76.84 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $73.13, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures also fell 3 of 5 trading days on the NYMEX, with gains of 4.6 cents Monday and 7 cents Wednesday, offset by declines Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday's 7.4 cent drop. Futures ended the week at $2.123 per MCF, down from $2.143 MCF at last Friday's close. The U.S. Energy Information Administration offered a mixed outlook for energy prices for the remainder of 2024 into early 2025. In its August short-term energy outlook, the agency expects crude oil prices to rise in the second half of the year, with Brent, the international benchmark, rising to between $85 and $90 per barrel by the end of the year. U.S. benchmark WTI is forecast to hover around $80 into 2025. According to the EIA's outlook, WTI could climb as high as $120 at the end of a 95% NYMEX price confidence, and as low as $40 at the low end. Price increases are largely attributed to falling oil inventories. The EIA said it lowered its 2025 forecast for prices mostly because of expected reduced oil consumption. The EIA forecasts 2% less natural gas will be consumed to generate electricity in August compared to July. Because of falling consumption and flat production, the agency expects Henry Hub prices to remain below $2.50 per MMBTU through October. But the agency forecasts a ramp-up in consumption for heating, as well as in liquefied natural gas exports from new facilities in Texas and Louisiana, will boost the price to an average $3.10 per MMBTU from November through March. The good news for consumers is that lower natural gas prices will result in a marginal 1% increase in residential electricity prices and gasoline prices to remain lower this year into next year than 2023 levels. Fatal collision involving Seminole High School bus. Gaines County. A school bus returning from a school athletic event for Seminole High School was involved in a fatal collision. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, the collision took place at about 8:56 p.m. Thursday at the intersection of U.S. Route 385 and County Road 320. While 25 Seminole High School students were recorded as on board during the time of the collision, the students reported no injuries. All students were released to school officials at the scene. According to the preliminary report, a 2005 Van Hool charter bus, a Seminole ISD school bus, was traveling northbound along US 385 while in the outside lane. A 2005 GMC Yukon was reported as traveling eastbound on CR 230 and turning left onto US 385. The Yukon failed to yield the right way to the school bus and was then struck by the bus. The collision caused the Yukon to roll over into the Barrow Ditch, while the school bus remained upright and came to a stop, facing northbound along the shoulder of US 385. The driver of the Yukon was a 65-year-old man from Seminole. However, his name has not been released, pending next of kin notification. He was pronounced dead on the scene by Justice of the Peace Patrick Packy Kissick. The second driver involved in the collision was reported as 72-year-old Eugene Reed, also of Seminole. Reed was not injured. Filing period to run in local races ends Monday. The filing period to appear on the November 8th general election ballot runs through Monday. Here is who has filed applications to run in local races so far as of Friday. Midland City Council. District 1, Brian Stubbs, Heather Bredemus. District 2, John Norman, incumbent. At large, two seats, Robin Poole, incumbent, Eric Davidson, incumbent, John Burkholder, Rance C. Norton. Midland ISD. District 1, Courtney Ratliff, Denise Norman, Michael Booker, incumbent. District 2, Robert Marquez, incumbent, Angel Hernandez. District 4, Neville Patton, Matt Fries, Emily Staten Smith. District 7, Joshua Gwynn, Brian Murray, incumbent. Midland College. Place 4, Mike Ostman. Place 5, Steve Castle, incumbent. Place 6, Charlene McBride, incumbent. Midland Hospital District Board of Directors. No filings yet. Learn more about the opportunity to run for the Board of Directors at https://www.midlandhealth.org/main/Board of Directors Resources. Odessa City Council. Mayor Bernard Calvin Cal Hendrick VII, Javier Joven, incumbent. District 1, Eddie Mitchell, Mark Mata, incumbent. District 2, Stephen Thompson, incumbent. At large, Denise Swanner, incumbent, Craig Stoker. Drilling activity declines across the board. Drilling activity took a step back from last week's gains, falling for the second time in 3 weeks. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its weekly U.S. rig count fell 2 rigs to 586, down 56 rigs or 8.7% from the 642 rigs active last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil also fell by 2 rigs to 483, down 37 from 520 rigs seeking crude last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 1 to 98, still down 19 from 117 rigs drilling for natural gas last year. Texas followed the national trend, dropping 3 rigs to have 273 rigs active statewide, down 39 from 312 rigs last year. New Mexico was unchanged at 107 rigs. Ohio 1 joined Texas as a major producing state to see a decline, while Oklahoma 2 was the only producing state to see an increase. The Permian Basin likewise followed suit, losing 1 rig for 303 rigs active region-wide. That's down 24 from 327 rigs counted last year. The Eagle Ford lost 2 rigs for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian Basin with 52 rigs for a second week. Lee County, New Mexico remains second most active, continuing to report 51 rigs. Martin County had 31 rigs for a seventh week, while Reeves County had 28 rigs for a second week. Loving County was unchanged at 21 rigs, and Midland County was also unchanged with 18 rigs. Reagan County reported 15 rigs for a third week. Upton County reported 13 rigs for a third week. Howard County gained 1 rig for 12 at work within county lines. Mitchell County saw no activity this week with the loss of its 1 rig. Energy dedicated software as a service firm in Varis said its U.S. rig count rose 1 rig to 622 for the week ended August 9th. That's 83 rigs or 12% below the 705 in Varis reported last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil was unchanged at 199 rigs, down 223 rigs or 53% from 422 rigs a year ago. There were 87 rigs drilling for natural gas, up 3 rigs for the week, but down 92 rigs or 51% from 179 a year ago. ExxonMobil remains at the top of the list of top 10 producers by rig count with 40 rigs, unchanged for the week. ConocoPhillips followed with 31 rigs, down 1 rig, and Occidental with 26 rigs, unchanged for the week. Enverus said the Permian Basin had 305 rigs at work in the region, up 1 rig for the week ended August 9th, and down 36 rigs or 11% from 341 a year ago. The most active play, the Delaware Basin, gained 2 rigs during the week for 166 rigs, down 21 rigs, or 11%, from 187 a year ago. The Midland Basin fell 2 rigs to 116 for the week and is down 15 rigs, or 11%, from 131 a year ago. In terms of trailing 30-day drilling permits, the Permian had 694 permits as of the week ended July 26th, up from 681 the previous week, but below 730 a year earlier. The Permian had 121 active frac crews as of the week ended July 26th, up from 109 a week earlier, but down from 146 a year earlier. Oil report. S&P Global lowers oil production outlook. Non-organization of petroleum exporting countries, producers, appear to be taking their feet off the gas pedal. A new analysis from S&P Global Commodity Insights finds that the strong production growth by non-OPEC countries led by the United States appears to be slowing. The company's outlook expects non-OPEC plus countries to add 829,000 barrels per day of crude, including condensate. That is down 390,000 barrels from the previous forecast. For 2025, S&P Global expects production to grow by 1,117,000 barrels per day, down 570,000 barrels from the previous forecast. Jim Burkhard, Vice President and Head of Research for Oil Markets, Energy, and Mobility at S&P Global Commodity Insights, stressed that these figures are for all non-OPEC plus countries, not just the U.S. S&P Global also lowered its expectations for U.S. crude production growth in its analysis. The U.S. is still expected to produce more oil in 2025 than at any other time in history, but the degree by which it will exceed its previous record is substantially lower, Burkhard wrote. U.S. production is now expected to grow by 182,000 barrels per day for the remainder of 2024, down by 174,000 barrels from the previous forecast. For 2025, U.S. production is expected to grow by 429,000 barrels a day, down 311,000 barrels per day from the previous forecast. Lower expectations for U.S. output are the key driver for the downward revision, according to Burkhard. Quote, the main reason is that drilling activity is simply lower than we had anticipated, and deceleration in productivity also plays a role, end quote, he told the reporter Telegram by email. He wrote that less upstream activity is a reflection of expectations for decelerating demand growth and lower prices. Burkhard attributed slowing global demand to Chinese oil demand. Quote, China's oil demand boomed last year as the country reopened, but it only reopens once, so the impact of the reopening on demand is faded, end quote, he wrote. S&P Global's analysis also finds that lower supply growth will not necessarily mean higher oil prices. With more supply expected from OPEC Plus later this year, the global oil market is still on track to be oversupplied in 2025. And despite the cut to the U.S. outlook, S&P Global expects crude oil prices in 2025 to lower, on average, than in 2024. Turning produced water into dollars faces hurdles. Long seen as a waste, the water being produced alongside the Permian's crude and natural gas is now being seen as a potential asset. Turning those drops into dollars remains a challenge as researchers and the industry seeks ways to add value through innovative reuse and mineral extraction. The subject was the focus of a panel discussion at the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference this week. Quote, discussion has been focused on water as a waste. Operators spend a lot of money to bring it to the surface, end quote, said Matthew Sanderson, Executive Vice President and Chief Commercial Officer with Tetra Technologies. Quote, it's not a waste. We need to understand what is in the water, understand what can be commercialized, and understand what can be used, end quote, he said. Madi Malmali, Assistant Professor, Department of Chemical Engineering at Texas Tech University, agreed, telling the audience of the need to identify each constituent in the water and develop a supply chain to produce those minerals at scale. Quote, from my point of view, we need to look beyond a sustained resource and look at any concentration of minerals, and if we can reasonably source minerals and chemicals and build a sustainable supply chain at scale, end quote, Malmali said. Quote, we talked earlier about beneficial reuse and the need to keep produced water from being disposed of as long as possible, end quote, said John Duran, President and Chief Sustainability Officer at XRI Holdings. Quote, we need to break down those elements and how they interact. Whether it's in the Permian Basin or other basins around the world, we need to create value for our customers as well as society, end quote. Jeff Braun, leads project manager at Bechtel, noted that his company has developed desalination technology being tested in Midland County and is seeking to maximize drops by recovering clean water, extracting constituents like lithium, hydrochloric acid, and other items. He said the industry needs to find ways to invest in the infrastructure to extract those constituents and move them to end users. Quote, we need an end-to-end solution, end quote, observed Sanderson. Duran commented that the water management industry needs to develop the ability to transport large quantities of treated produced water for use in areas not just by oil and gas companies, but by outside industries. His company is excited about the opportunities and is moving part of its business into transporting water to other industries to diversify its core business. Quote, it's up to all of us in this room to keep the sector growing in the right direction, not just in mineral extraction and other areas, but into areas we don't know about yet, end quote, Duran said. VTX uses modeling analysis to address water management. Eric Hoover, President and Chief Operating Officer of VTX Energy Partners, marked a career first with his presentation to attendees at the Produced Water Society Permian Basin Conference. Quote, this is a first for me, attending a conference focused on water, end quote. He told his audience as he offered the perspective of a small operator on dealing with water issues. VTX entered the Lower 48 in 2021 with the acquisition of Hunt Oil's Midland Basin assets. In 2023, the company acquired the Delaware Basin Investment Group, DBIG, gaining assets that produce 40,000 barrels of oil per day, 70,000 cubic feet of natural gas per day, and 290,000 barrels of water per day. The assets included 20 water source water wells, 22 saltwater disposal wells injecting 250,000 barrels of water per day, and 75 miles of water transfer pipeline. VTX has 328 producing wells, a 10-year inventory of 500 drilling locations using a two-rig program, uses 700,000 barrels of water per well, and uses 4,000 acre-feet of water per year of brackish water from the Rustler and Santa Rosa formations. Its own electric grid saves $6,500 per day and dramatically reduces its emissions footprint. A fuel gas line to supply fuel to frack and production fleets saves $200,000 per well. Quote, the challenge is we need bigger pipe, end quote, Hoover said. The company operates 26 miles of 12-inch pipe but needs to move up to 16 or 20-inch pipe, he said. The company has also observed rising pore pressure in its DBIG assets over time, including a 1 pound increase in just the last year. And because of movement and pore pressure increases, Hoover said zonal isolation can be difficult. Advancing cement technology has helped, and VTX designed a fast-setting cement to address the issue. VTX continues to study the issue using modeling and analysis to see how much water can be injected before problems arise. Quote, these wells will be producing for 30 years, so we need to ensure wellbore integrity, end quote, he stated. But the company has realized it cannot keep injecting water. Quote, operators and water midstream companies are outgrowing legacy water infrastructure, end quote, he said. Quote, the industry has gotten really good at reusing and recycling water, but the industry needs alternative solutions for handling produced water, end quote. He suggested expanding networks to other disposal areas and developing cost-effective technologies to take advantage of the large volumes of produced water. And he said the industry must continue to study the relationship between water injection and seismicity. PWS speaker warns Permian approaching injection limits. Rising water volumes and poor pressures are driving the Permian Basin industry to seek out-of-basin water disposal and beneficial reuse. Quote, "We know we need both," end quote, said Robert Crane, Executive Vice President, Texas Pacific Water Resources. Addressing the second and final day of the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference, Crane told his audience he was focusing on the Delaware Basin, where his company operates. In the Delaware, he said high water cuts are pervasive, and the company has seen a 20% increase information pressure since 2017, and high-intensity spatial zones are seeing even greater pressure increases. Quote, "Texas' poor space could reach injection limits by 2030, end quote, he cautioned. Quote, "Demand for disposal could exceed current operational injection capacity around 2030, end quote. That is why developing out-of-basin disposal and beneficial reuse outside the industry are becoming increasingly critical in order to facilitate continued upstream development," Crane said. But out-of-basin infrastructure, such as an 80-mile pipeline to carry water from Reeves County to Andrews County for disposal, requires substantial capital and resources, and break-even gathering fees of $1 per barrel of water or more will increase disposal costs for operators. Rising disposal costs will serve to make beneficial reuse a more attractive alternative, one that is more difficult but also more sustainable. The challenges to getting there include initial capital and operational expenditures, liability and regulatory concerns, the need for operators and water treatment companies to each receive competitive prices and developing a royalty system for landowners. Crane's company has a pilot project in a lab in South Midland County, growing alfalfa in soils from three counties and using produced water with various amounts of total dissolved solids removed. The company is working with the Railroad Commission for permits for a field-scale version of the project in Reeves County. The company is also working with the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality for permits to discharge some of the treated water in the Pecos River. Quote, "TPWR believes aquifer recharge is the safest and most viable option for beneficial reuse," end quote, Green said. Water industry seen following same shifts as operators. Produced water is uncovered everywhere, and more comes every day. Growth in the volume of produced water has slowed, but is still one of the biggest challenges the energy industry faces, said John Schmitz, Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of Select Water Solutions. "And the issue is not solely with the Permian, but lies across all basins," he told attendees at the Produced Water Society Permian Conference. His company's customers are focused on recycling and reuse solutions, but even if 100% recycled water is used in fracturing operations, Schmitz said there remains 5 billion barrels of produced water to manage. Schmitz told his audience the water market is shifting just as the exploration and production market has shifted. Public E&P companies are feeling the pressure to maintain inventories and are chasing the benefits of larger scale. He added post-merger companies tend to lower activity and the competition for investor attention is, quote, fierce, end quote. Likewise, the water market is shifting to commercialized midstream and further consolidation among water handling companies is expected. Quote, "These moves come as water operators get stuck, feel the pressure to grow, and seek the benefits of scaled networks," end quote, he said. Systems, networks, and regional scope will give options to operators and water companies to use water outside the oil fields, he said. Mineral extraction will be a source of profit and stable cash flow as prices rise, and the technology is proven, though that could take up to a decade, Schmitz said. Beneficial reuse of produced water outside the industry, on the other hand, will be technically, commercially, and regulatory viable in the next 1 to 2 years and will scale, he said. Select is targeting partial desalination of treated water, and the secret sauce is in pretreatment, technical assembly, and operations. The company is pursuing scaled pilots beyond lab scale, he said. Quote, "Water can fuel the energy transition, but we have to attract projects," And Quote, he stated, "A lot of new technology and advanced energy, hydrogen, green methane, natural gas power generation, and carbon capture, utilization, and storage are trying to find their way to market, but the industry must work to be part of those efforts," he said. In the Permian Basin alone, he said, forecasts have the region seeing an 8% shortfall in water by 2030. Currently, an average of 13.7 million barrels a day of produced water is disposed of in the Permian. Quote, "We're 13.7 million barrels a day long in a region that needs water," end quote, he said. Quote, "Put it all together and we can provide the 8% that's lacking. The industry can provide the solution," end quote. Industry, regulators, academics collaborating on water issues. Regulators, academics, and water companies at the forefront of advancing beneficial reuse of produced water outside the oil industry discussed the path forward at the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference. Quote, "The industry decided it would have to move forward with beneficial reuse instead of disposing of the water," end quote, noted Mike Hightower, program director at the New Mexico Produced Water Research Consortium. He told the audience in 2022-23, the consortium tested 3 or 4 treatment technologies. In 2024, as many as 24 were tested, and he said 5 or 6 are already lined up to tested next year. Likewise, Rusty Smith, executive director of the Texas Produced Water Consortium, is seeing an increase in proposals. Quote, "2 years ago, we couldn't have pinpointed a single treatment facility. Today, we have companies with facilities testing beneficial reuse," end quote, Smith said. Quote, "We have a report headed to Texas legislators in October about partnering with the industry, what we've seen, what we've analyzed, what we've learned," end quote. Adrian Lopez, research and development manager with Texas Pacific Water Resources, said about a year ago, her company was looking at any project it could think of before settling on a lab environment testing produced water on alfalfa grown in soils from 3 different counties. The water had various levels of total produced solids. Quote, "Today we know a lot more about water, and we can have more creative discussions on what to do with produced water and its potential uses," end quote, she said. Ted Wooten, chief engineer in the oil and gas division at the Railroad Commission, said the agency has been talking with those in the industry and is aware of the projects underway. Quote, "I am compelled to believe in the processes they use. I believe in the purity," end quote, he said. Quote, "I trust them," end quote. Lori Fleet, special assistant in the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality's Office of Water, noted that her agency is relatively new to the issue, having just been granted authority to issue state and federal discharge permits by the Environmental Protection Agency just a couple of years ago. Quote, "We can digest all the research, but the public is looking over our shoulders and will be contesting permits," end quote, she said. "Already the order of magnitude of discharge applications has gone off the charts," she said. Quote, "That's our future. We can do things to be protective of the processes and standards in place so we can track the permits and ensure water is protected," end quote, she said. What concerns Wooten, he said, is that the information being conveyed about the efforts. It may make complete sense to those in the room, quote, "But what about the other 95%, end quote, he said. Quote, "How do we convince the public it's cleaner? How do we tell them there's nothing in the water that will affect them? Because they're hearing the complete opposite," end quote. Hightower noted the public needs to be made aware the efforts involve treated produced water, not raw produced water. Some efforts have yielded water that is higher quality than the Pecos River. Still, he sees tremendous support from the community for efforts to clean produced water and turn it into a new source of water for use on parks or golf courses. And he said industries not generally supportive of oil and gas are also very interested in treated produced water for use in their operations. Beneficial reuse of produced water ready to move ahead. In 125 years of business, engineering, construction, and project managing firm Bechtel has faced a number of challenges. Quote, "We haven't seen a challenge quite as unique as the Permian Basin's produced water," end quote, said Jamie McMillan, general manager, water, and pipeline, as he addressed the second day of the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference. He cited the complexity of the water as well as the volumes generated and told his audience the greatest challenge is finding alternatives to disposal by injection. Quote, that includes beneficial reuse. Beneficial reuse has evolved over the last 7 years and made tremendous progress. I believe we are close to a step change and we're ready to take that next step, end quote, McMillan said. What is blocking that next step is finding the answers to two questions. Is it technically possible and is it economically viable? When clients from Diamondback to Chevron and more asked the company to help tackle the issue of produced water, he said Bechtel spent hours understanding the spectrum of constituents in the water and just what to do with that water. Quote, we quickly realized there are already commercially available technologies, end quote, he said, adding that research consortiums in Texas and New Mexico have done great research, and there are a number of pilot projects also yielding good results. He said the industry has come a long way in closing the gap between disposal costs and treating costs and is coming closer to making beneficial reuse competitive. Quote, being technically possible doesn't matter if it's not economic, end quote, he pointed out. Bechtel itself has been testing its proprietary low-energy ejector desalination system, LEEDS, technology to provide produced water desalination services to customers across the Permian Basin. The company has partnered with Five Point Energy for Deep Blue Holdings, a portfolio company of Five Point, to operate the pilot unit at a saltwater disposal well near Midland. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram after his presentation, McMillan said the test will end around the end of the month and has treated effluent containing anywhere from 120,000 to 190,000 parts per million of total dissolved solids, reducing that to about 34 ppm of TDS. Desalination, he explained, is a critical step in treating produced water, especially in the Permian Basin, where the water has such high salinity, 3 to 4 times that of the ocean. Traditional treatments don't work, he noted. Quote, when our customers, who are all major players in the Permian Basin, told us they had a huge water problem, an existential problem, we knew desalination had to be one of the steps. We also realized it was more complicated than that one step, end quote, he said. Creating value from produced water, like extracting minerals or selling to other industries like agriculture, is a ways away, he said. But the various pilot projects testing beneficial reuse are reaching a point of maturity and providing enough data that such efforts are within reach. Bechtel is in talks with other companies about repeating its LEEDS pilot elsewhere and is preparing to commercialize the unit. It's ready, sitting on the shelf waiting for the right partner to bring it to market, he said. The industry, he said, quote, can't treat water as business as usual. It's critical the industry figure this out before someone shuts us down. The industry is too critical to the world's economy, to security, end quote, he said. SM Energy details Woodford Barnett well results. After keeping mum on activity in its Sweetie Peck area, SM Energy is spilling the beans on its work on the development at the intersection of Midland, Upton, and Crane counties. During its second quarter earnings call, SM President and Chief Executive Officer Herb Vogel told analysts the company has confirmed bringing online 2 Woodford Barnett wells during the quarter. One, a 10,200-foot lateral test, had a 30-day peak initial potential of 1,622 barrels of oil equivalent per day, while the second, a 5,900-foot lateral, had a 30-day initial potential peak of 830 BOE per day. Quote, we are very pleased with early results and the potential to add more than 20,000 prospective net acres in this deeper formation, Vogel said during the call. He said the two wells, together with offset operator wells, indicate more than 20,000 net acres at Sweetie Peck that are prospective for Woodford Barnett development, inclusive of previously announced acreage additions to the west. Quote, we have been tight-lipped about our activity in the greater Sweetie Peck area for some time as we added acreage, end quote, he told analysts. But with the production data now public, he said the company was pleased to report the data. Initial results compare favorably to peers in the area, he said. In the Permian Basin, SM plans 72 wells drilled and 71 completions. The expected average lateral length is about 11,760 feet, including 32 wells with 15,000-foot average lateral length. SM plans to run 4 rigs and 2 completion crews. Geothermal project slated for South Texas. A South Texas coal mine and coal-fired power plant will host a new geothermal energy storage facility as part of a local electric utilities energy transition. Sage Geosystems, a Houston-based startup founded by former executives from Shell, first announced plans to build a 3-megawatt geothermal energy storage facility, capable of providing enough electricity to power 750 Texas homes on the hottest summer days in February. The company said Tuesday that the project would be built in Christine, about an hour south of San Antonio. Sage has leased 10 acres for the facility from San Miguel Electric Cooperative, a utility that powers up to 78,200 South Texas homes. Sage CEO Cindy Taff said, "The geothermal project will be on the same site as San Miguel's coal mine and coal-fired power plant. The project could be the first geothermal facility in Texas and comes as the state's grid faces twin pressures from unprecedented power demand growth and extreme weather. Grid experts say energy storage systems can help stabilize the grid by providing electricity when it's most needed and by storing excess renewable energy for use when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing." San Miguel CEO Craig Corder said the utility began to take an interest in geothermal energy, and in Sage Geosystems in particular, as it grappled with how to provide cleaner yet still affordable and reliable electricity to its customers in rural South Texas. San Miguel has faced lawsuits from local ranchers over water and soil pollution from the Christine mine. The coal-fired power plant and lignite coal mine are supposed to close in 2037. That end date could come sooner if cheap solar and wind power make it uneconomic to produce coal-fired power, or if federal regulations aiming to limit climate warming emissions from coal-fired power plants are enacted, Corder said. Quote, "We have to be ready at any time between now and 2037 and have a game plan for how we are going to continue producing this power, and it doesn't happen overnight," end quote, he said. Sage aims to complete construction of the Christine facility by December, though when the project will be operational depends on when the company's application to connect to the grid operated by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas is processed, Taft said. The project is estimated to cost $14 million, including the cost for the ERCOT application and for research and development, she said. Geothermal technology leverages heat beneath the Earth's surface for energy production. Though the technology has been around for decades, it is seeing a resurgence of enthusiasm, including from the Department of Energy, because fracking technologies developed from the oil and gas industry have made this clean energy resource more cost-effective and broadly available than before. No geothermal resources currently provide generation to the ERCOT grid, spokesperson Trudy Webster said. In 2025, Sage Geosystems hopes to be the first. Its geothermal energy storage facility would be able to store electricity for up to 10 hours, Taff said. The energy storage resource most abundant on the ERCOT grid now is lithium-ion battery storage, which can store electricity for up to 4 hours and has faced pushback from Houston area communities afraid of potential fires and explosions. Quote, "The need for longer and longer duration storage is coming, and our storage can deliver that," end quote, Taff said. Sage Geosystems technology works by drilling a well and an accompanying reservoir offshoot, she said. The facility will use subsurface heat to increase the round-trip efficiency of moving water into and out of underground fractures to generate electricity. But the heat itself won't be converted into electricity, she said. Instead, when demand for electricity is low, and thus electricity prices are low, the facility will take electricity from the ERCOT grid to pump water into the underground fracture, inflating it like a balloon. When the demand for and cost of electricity spikes, valves will open and pressure will shoot water back up the well, spinning turbines that generate electricity, Taff said. Sage chose to locate its, quote, first of its kind, end quote, project within the ERCOT grid, not only because the company could get permits to build quicker in Texas, but also because the ERCOT market has volatile electricity prices, which suits the energy storage business model, Taft said. The company is exploring installing solar panels to generate the electricity to be stored in its geothermal facility, Taft said. The company is also looking at putting a Bitcoin mining trailer by the geothermal facility to simulate the needs of a data center, as Taft aspires for Sage Geosystems to eventually provide off-grid electricity to data centers. Assuming the net cost of electricity generated from solar panels is 2 cents per kilowatt hour, electricity from Sage Geosystems' geothermal energy storage facility paired with solar would cost 5 cents per kilowatt hour for a full day of energy production, Taft said. San Miguel is also looking at reusing some of the 12,000 acres of land it owns and now uses for coal mining to host solar farms, Quarter said.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.